Now, folks, we'd like to introduce General Joe Engel, Major General Joe Engel, let me put it that way. He's from Abilene, Texas, Kansas. Oh, well, I meant Texas. Abilene, Kansas. He went to the University of Kansas, and he was aviation cadet in 1955, pilot training in Malden. He flew the T-34A in Malden and the T-38, right? T-28. And then the F-100s at George. And then he was recommended by then-Lieutenant Colonel Chuck Yeager to go to test pilot school. He graduated in 1962. He attended Aerospace Research Pilot School to train as an astronaut, graduated in 1963, back when I was 12. Selected as project pilot for the X-15, he did 16 flights, exceeded Mach 5 on 10, one of 8 X-15 pilots to become an astronaut at 32. He was the youngest astronaut. He's support for Apollo 10, backup for the lunar modular pilot Apollo 14, commander of the 747 Space Shuttle Enterprise, recently in a re-entry glide test, 29 flights, 244 hours in space, only astronaut to have flown two different winged vehicles into space, X-15 and Space Shuttle Commander on the second Space Shuttle, STS-2, is that correct? And mission commander on STS-51-1. Now, you flew the T-34 in pilot training. What was your impression of the T-34? Just what my little... We really didn't get that much time in the T-34, did you?
No, we only got... I think I only got about 30, 40 hours. I can't remember. It was somewhere between 30 and 40 hours in primary, and then they transitioned us into the T-28. As you're listening to General Boyd talk about it, that's exactly what I would have said if I could talk that pretty, is that, you know, all the emotional feelings that you get to that airplane. One thing you missed, I had really desperately tried to not necessarily build up flying time, but to get as much flying experience and learn as much as I could about flying, so when I did get in the Air Force and I knew I was going to get into a class, that I could do reasonably well. I could fly and I'd feel comfortable with an airplane. And so there were two things about the T-34. First of all, I got to admit, it was a neat airplane to fly, and it was free. I didn't have to pay for the flying time anymore. And how many of you have been in that situation? Yeah, it had a great feeling when you get to fly a neat airplane. And to me, after flying Cessna 140s and Luscombs and anything that the Little Grass Airport had that I could fly, to get a tricycle gear airplane with a canopy and nobody sitting beside you, you know, you could really be a fighter pilot in this thing, and it would fly like a fighter. That little rascal would do anything you wanted it to do. And it's just a beautiful flying airplane. I just enjoyed the heck out of it.
Well, now, Joe, you've had some experience in the B model. Tell us about your experience in the B model at Maxwell.
Well, I know. I'd rather tell it first, because the first guy really has the advantage. The second guy has to prove him wrong. I was flying, was a bunch of young Eagles we were flying down
young
there.
Young Eagles.
And Chuck Yeager and I were flying them in a couple of Sam and Dogs, I guess, airplane.
Yeah.
And I came back, and I know full well that tire was balded before I ever started flying that afternoon. But I got credit for putting a bald spot on the tire of Sam's airplane. Was it your airplane?
No, it was Dog's.
It was Dog's airplane. Well, I got credit for the bald spot on the tire, and I not only got credit for the tire, I got the tire mounted on a big plaque that I had to promised to display in a prominent place in my home, and I do. It's
well, it was a lot of fun, and I think it really was flat for you got in it, but you just didn't notice it. You didn't do a walk around as you're supposed to do.
I did, but I noticed that flat spot was right on the bottom of the concrete.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. But actually, Joe didn't fly the T-34 that much, but he did fly some other things that I think you people would be interested in. Space Shuttle X-15. So, Joe, tell us about a typical mission in the X-15.
The mission itself lasted anywhere from 10 to 12 minutes, depending on whether it was a speed flight. Normally, it'd be about 10 and a half minutes long, because you burn burn the propellant out full throttle, and it the propellant was gone in a minute and a half. The engine would burn for about 88 seconds, and then you were out of fuel. The rest of it was just coasting and deceleration and getting data. And you would decelerate because you were only at about 110,000 feet, so there was a good bit of drag. The altitude flights lasted at least 12 minutes long because you were arcing over the top, literally in space, above the atmosphere, and it would just take that long to arc up over the top, make the reentry, and then set up and land. So both missions lasted in the neighborhood of 10, 12 minutes. About a minute and a half of power flights. Really hard to build up flying time in that X-15 at 10 minutes of flight. But it was a very exciting airplane to fly. It was an honest airplane, and you felt comfortable in it, except in a few instances when you got close to the edge of the envelope, and either during the reentry or at very high speeds.
Well, now, later in your career, particularly in the space shuttle, you had simulators that actually were pretty much identical. What kind of training did you have for the X-15? Because that was pretty early in the program.
Yes, it was. We really didn't have a good trainer for the high speed and the really high altitude flights, although we could get a feel for what losing control with aerodynamic surfaces and regaining control with aerodynamic surfaces was like with the F-104. The F-104 was an excellent trainer for the landing pattern, setting up the overhead, getting the sight picture to line up on final approach, and touching down precisely where you wanted to. And we used the F-104 very extensively, more than we really would have had to, because it was a fun airplane to fly too. And using the excuse that we were going to go practice approaches, and we did. We'd take the 104 and go uprange in the desert and find abandoned lake beds where we could use them as emergency landing sites and practice landings into these remote runways. The drag, the lift to drag ratio, we could configure the F-104 with coming to idle, speed brakes out, flaps down to landing, and the gear down, and that was about the same drag, lift to drag, that the X-15 had when it was coming in. So we had a really reasonably good airplane to practice with, set up the pattern.
Well, I guess the next step in your career was the Apollo, is that correct?
Right.
All right.
Right.
Well, now you were involved in the recovery of Apollo 13. You remember we were discussing that this morning, so you don't remember.
I have trouble remembering.
No, seriously, that was very interesting what you had to say about the Apollo 13 and how the computers got them in, and particularly your role in it of cutting up toilet paper.
It was, I wasn't really recognized as that much of a computer expert at NASA, so I really wasn't asked for the tough questions or the tough answers on computers and what to do with them. But one of the things that happened on Apollo 13, you probably remember, the command module had an explosion and lost all its oxygen, which was used to generate both electrical power and pressurization and for breathing. And so fortunately, they had not committed and separated from the limb in lunar orbit yet. They hadn't made it to lunar orbit yet. So the limb was still out there and intact. And the decision was made to use the limb as a lifeboat to go live in and to use its computer and its guidance and command system to make the burns to keep the two vehicles on orbit are on track to hit at the right place near the moon and above the moon to swing around the moon and then make a burn on the backside to head back to Earth using the lunar module's descent engine, the one that would normally be used to land on the moon, because the engine on the command module was not available. So they used the lunar module for a lifeboat to perform all these functions. The guys went transferred in there because they didn't have any oxygen to breathe, no way to get rid of carbon dioxide in the command module. After about a day period of time, they would have been suffocated in there. The lunar module had the systems operating all right, but they didn't have enough lithium hydroxide canisters. Those are the things that filter out the carbon dioxide so that you can reuse that air again. They had some, but not enough to get three people for the 5 days it was going to take to get them back. It was only a two-man vehicle, remember. The other guy stayed in the command module. So there was plenty of lithium containers, lithium hydroxide containers to wash out the air in the command module, and not near enough in the LEM. Only problem was the command module canisters were round, and the ones in the lunar module were square. Why they didn't make them the same, I don't know, because I guess everything was very space critical, and where they ended up with space for lithium hydroxide storage was square in the LEM. But anyway, one was round, one was square. So they had plenty of filters, but they just didn't fit the right filtration, the air ventilation system in the LEM. So Deke asked me and a couple other guys to go over to the simulator, lock ourselves in the simulator with nothing but what the crew had, the checklists and the duct tape and stuff like that, and figure out how to make the round containers work in the square hole. I think he did that because it was not probably 6 months before that. He and I had been on an elk hunting trip up in Wyoming, and we had a stove in the tent, and it had a square top on the stove, and of course the pipe that went out the top of the tent was round, and we had to adapt something to hook one to the other. So I think that was the only reason he let me even put my hands on anything on a mission that critical. But he told me, okay, go ahead and figure out how to make that work. You got to use the stuff that's in there. So we cut up the heavy cardboard checklist, adapted them from a square hole to a round thing using duct tape, and brought it back and showed him in mission control. He said, okay, tell them to build it this way. And so that's how they washed out the carbon dioxide.
Well, explain to us again how the computers, not you, but the computers figured out exactly where the entry was so that it wouldn't burn up. I guess there's a very small... very small angle there, I guess, where it will disintegrate.
It was a small window that the Apollo had to come in sort of almost tangent to the Earth, to the atmosphere, so that it would hit with enough, deep enough or fast enough into the atmosphere to get enough drag to slow down and continue to fall in the atmosphere. And the two opposite sides of that, one is if it came in too high, it would just skip right off and go back out into deep space, and then they wouldn't have had not enough consumables to last. If it had come in too steep into the Earth, it would, of course, dug into the atmosphere too fast and burned up or broken up. So it was a very, very small window. I've heard people say that if you take the Earth and make it the size of a softball and put the moon 10 feet away, it'll be the size of a ping pong ball. And being 10 feet apart, then the moon, of course, is going around the Earth. In 3 days it takes to get to the moon, on that scale, the moon would have traveled 10 feet. So you can figure you got to aim 10 feet ahead of a ping pong ball, and you've got to come right along the edge of it within the thickness of about 3 to 4 sheets of typing paper. And that's how accurate the guidance has to be. Now, they didn't do that in one burn from the Earth. On the way to the moon, there was burn corrections that they could make, called mid-course correction. Kind of like tossing a bowling ball down and then patting it as you're going down there to make sure it goes right in the center of the lane all the way. But it was, in fact, a very critical computation and awesome computation, too. I really hand it to the engineering community, the guidance folks that figured it out.
Well, unfortunately, Joe was prepared to go up on Apollo 17.
17, yeah.